This is the Taranaki Museum Oral History Program, an interview with Mr. Goodwin, who is currently visiting New Plymouth from his home in Hawke's Bay. Today is the 30th of July, 1997. We're recording on a Sony WM-D6C cassette recorder using Sony ECM-144 microphones. The interviewer is Mary Donald, and this is tape three. You were talking about your awards. And,
I can't recall too many at the moment. I've had a number of life memberships, but some of them are more or less open memberships. It's the only ones that I I value most are the ones that are limited distribution. But sometimes I think that might be a little bit hard on some of the other people who are equally deserving. And in the organisations I've been associated with, we have developed supplementary awards that are warranted by these people that are just unfortunate enough not to be able to qualify by means of number, because they've been excluded by somebody lives too long, or such remark could be passed. Perhaps I've lived too long myself. I don't know.
It's very special, isn't it, to be one of the early recipients such awards. It's a great honour.
Yes, I quite appreciate. In fact, when they've been announced, I've been rather overwhelmed by the honour, and why me, and do I deserve it any better more than somebody else? And I can remember well that the IDS one, that there were two people that I said, well, I'm a great pleasure in accepting, but I do feel so humble, and particularly in my knowledge of the work of two other members, and I named them, and my nomination was seconded, and they also received the awards the following year. And I can't, all the different things will come to mind, but those are the more important ones, I think, of the life membership of the New Zealand Institute of Parks was one that I appreciated, and then I later wrote or assisted in writing the history of the New Zealand Institute of Parks and Recreation. I think I've covered most of them. You can think of something that might have cropped up, I can't remember. There's quite a large number on me.
It would be really nice if we can actually make a list of those, and then, because what we do with these oral histories, we have the tapes, and we also have a folder which we gather information about you, which backs up information about that, and reinforces what is already on the tape. So at some stage, perhaps we can write a list out of bits and pieces and pop them in. That'd be good for the record. I think it's quite important to note these things. What would you like to talk about next?
Well, I thought that we should finish that piece off, and then go back to the first impressions of the book of Gula Park.
Right. I'm dying to hear it.
When I came up for my appointment, I stayed the night with Mr. Saxon, who was then chairman of the Pukekura Park Committee. And In the morning, he took me out into the park, and he said, put on some rough clothes and old clothes. I didn't have any old clothes, of course, but I got prepared myself to for a walk in the park anyway. And he took a slasher with him. And we had to cut our way into the Phillips Street Gully beside the kindergarten now, where the kindergarten is now. The cows, some of the cows were lying down. The convolvulus had grown up over them, other weedy climbers, and the weight of them had weighed down the kauri trees. Some of the kauri trees were out of shape, badly out of shape for that very reason. Others had managed to keep themselves clear. But that was just one corner of the park. And one that George hadn't appreciated the other day was that the corner from the Phillips Street Gully around towards the fernery and the lake, and the main lake, was completely shocker with seedling sycamore trees. And some of them had got quite big trunks. Some of them had been let go, I think, during the Depression years because the unemployment employed didn't do any of the heavier work, or very much of it. And the sycamores had actually got to the stage where they were suppressing the native plant growth. And so that was one of the first jobs, and it was very hard to appreciate it, although if you'd seen the town belt in Wellington and the town belt in Dunedin and some of the reserves in Christchurch after the war, you'd have realised that the parks throughout the country suffered because they weren't essential, and most of the younger active men were away overseas. The older men carried on much longer than normal. I think several of them carried on to their 80s. And so New Plymouth wasn't alone in that respect, and it's no disrespect to those that were left to carry on, that they managed to keep the main walks open anyway. And the strawberry tree, which makes quite a nice, the Nepal strawberry tree, the Benthamia, I quite valued it when I came here because of its flowering in early January in the summer when a lot of others have finished. It also has a grey green foliage, which is a contrast. It also has a masses of fruit in the autumn, which the tuis love it, and a lot of other birds as well. But in places, they'd seeded themselves down, and they were just coming up so thick that they were choking one another out, and that sort of thing. So we had a lot of the strawberry tree to cut out, and again in different areas, and a whole lot worse than others. But the plant material, anything that was in the way of litter or tree fern fronds and leaves, we tried to retain that as a mulch on the ground to help build up the soil again as we prepared sites for new more trees and things like that. And the stakes were that we saved from the clearing of all these masses of seedlings, we used them in securing the turf on the terraces had deteriorated, and we had to re-turf the faces of the terrace, and we had to use these long stakes to anchor them into the bank. Now they're using timber to secure the banks, but originally they were just turf banks pegged into place, and they held securely for a good many years. Also, we got a good source of charcoal from those sycamore trees. We saved the charcoal for use in potting mixes and and for traditional glasshouse work. But
so did you draw up a plan about what you wanted to do with the park?
Well, the...
Or was there plans already in existence?
The committee were ahead of me there. I can mention that the night I arrived in New Plymouth, I had an address to the Institute of Horticulture, 100 people present. Of course, I had no impressions of New Plymouth to give them except from occasional visits with students in the Massey days. And I came here in the late Depression years. I had one visit before the Massey College days. The first thing they wanted me to draw up a report on recommendations of what I considered good and should be done. And they wanted it for the next meeting, which would be a month away. And I felt that I just couldn't possibly even get round the boundary fences in a month. And so I asked for 3 months. And regrettably, I've not been able to find that copy of that report. But the report did cover, I can tell you that it covered. The only thing that I didn't actually accomplish was managed to establish. It was actually incorporated at Kawerau Park later. That was aquarium, a public aquarium. And they did have one operating at Kawerau Park for some years. But that was about one. The only one thing that was in there that wasn't actually completed. But some of them took 20 years to complete. I can remember the waterfall was... the first one on the list was the waterfall, the artificial waterfall at the end of the walk leading down from the band tent to the Hughes walk on the hillside. And that was one of my very firm impressions that it would be very effective indeed. And I had actually made, when I was in North Wales, I'd made a sketch of a waterfall there, a famous scenic attraction, which I thought would feature there. And when we came to build that, George Fuller worked on that, Ian McDowell worked on that, and Mr. Brody, the engineer, helped us with the basic formation. And we were able, I think, we got some grant towards it from insurance company, New Zealand Insurance Company, I think, if I remember rightly. They made a grant to the, for their centenary, I think it was, to the people of New Plymouth. And that was another of the water effects. The first one was the fountain. And then the water wheel came later, but it was included in that. The bowl,
so these are all in your original plan?
Yes. The sound shell across the water, the first suggestion came to me from Dougal Mackenzie of Palmerston North, that we should put it on the end of Cannon Hill by the bandstand there. But I had the problem that we found that we didn't have, at that time we didn't even have the hatchery lawn, because that was a lily pond, that so much of the flat land was occupied, there wasn't really room for big crowds anywhere. And I felt that we'd probably have to go to Brooklands later on, and there was a natural amphitheatre up there. The opening of stage sound shell was included, although it was, I don't know when I was in England that theme at Brooklands was adopted. So that was something that I'd voiced so many years before, and then it came to fruition 7 years, 8 years later.
Gosh, that must have been an amazing amount of work that you had to do to try and figure out what was in the park already and what possible things you could do with it, all in 3 months.
Actually, one of the things is before I signed my conditions of appointment, I was required to keep the boundary fences in good repair and order.
Stop getting in and out.
Yes. Well, the boundary fence on Brooklands Road Plantation was buried in grass. You couldn't find it. And on the racecourse side, they didn't need the fences over there, and they just let them go over the years up in the Maranui and those areas up there. When I tried to find the fences, I couldn't find them. I knew where the boundaries were. So I went to Mr. Bellringer, who was the town clerk at the time, and I told him, I said, if you wish to apply that condition to my appointment, I said, I don't think it's achievable, nor do I think it's desirable to spend all that money to fence all those areas when there's no real need for fencing. I says, if we can tidy up the frontage of Brooklands Road, it can just blend in into the trees and keep it tidy there. And the same was, except with the stock involved, there's no need to rebuild the fences. There's 22 entrances, I think, to the park, something like that.
And whereabouts did you live during this time? Did you have a house in the park or near the park?
Yes, I lived in that house, which is very similar in the design of
Was it the house in Victoria Road?
Yes.
Right, up on the top of the flat.
Yes.
Part up there.
Yes, it looks down into the park. It's all the sounds come up from the park. You can hear trouble. Of course, when you get down there, the trouble's often gone, but that was quite a good spot for a park house. Mr. Horton, that was built for Mr. Horton when he married a second time. And that was, I think, about the time he took the job in the park, he married a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there for 18 years, and then my wife hoped to move out into a home of her own to give her more security. The opportunity came when George Fuller came back to New Plymouth, who wanted to find a home for him, and we wanted to attract him to the job, a job that would enable him to look after the orchid collection, which is, I had always maintained, it was included in my original plan, but I did maintain that we'd have to have a competent orchid grower to look after the collection. Otherwise, we'd be keeping things that wouldn't flower and they wanted to do anything else. And the other big item in the report was the building up of a comprehensive collection of plants to introduce the public to a wider range of plant material than was generally available. And to that end, well, we set out and we had to go out into other parks because it was a big tree, so there wasn't enough room for Kukura Park, but the glasshouses were the report.
Were they still there? Were they there at that stage?
The glass houses, yes. Not the, there was a smaller begonia house where the Kibbe house is now.
Mm.
George Kibbe was so thrilled one time that he just said his mind he wanted to have a, contribute to a begonia house. And that was the outcome, the one that we have there at present. And the new development that they're suggesting was of going around was part of the original plan, was a balcony along the end of the glass houses so that you could lead them up through two tunnels and then take them along the end and they could look down and get an extra viewing and then go back through another house without having to pass the incoming crowd in the tunnels. And then actually we made an outlet out into the park so that when there were big crowds you could divert the people straight out into the park. And when there was just a normal crowd around you could just let them use the tunnels as they wished. But with the big crowds, and a lot of them when they were illuminated, that sort of thing, the illumination of the fernery was in part of the illumination of the park. But the use of the lights around the water and amongst the trees was one great thing I thought that would draw the people to the park, the general public to the park.
And when did that start, the illumination of the plants?
Well, I believe that a good many years ago, Mr. Horton's time, that the Salvation Army people put up a small string of lights and actually used the boats on the lake in the evening for a short period. Anyway, and I suppose at different times and special occasions they possibly put up floodlights. I don't know really. But the opportunity came on the first visit of the Queen in 1954, and we illuminated the glass houses, I think, for the first time. But again,
with electric light, you actually strung. Was there electricity already in there?
Oh yes, yes. We had no like today. They've got all underground cable of sufficient size to cater with the illuminations of the present day. But in those days we had to be very, very careful with the cables and the long lengths that we didn't overload. But the electricity department, I come back with the ideas, and the electricity department are just simply wonderful in the way they helped and made their contributions. They had a committee meeting and they just made the discussions on what was possible and what could be done and what was feasible and that sort of, they studied them out I couldn't have done it on my own. I'm absolutely sure of that, but for the opportunity was there when the first visit of the Queen to do something extra special. And we did street decorations and things that we've never done since, as far as that goes. But
because she had a reception, didn't she, on the cricket grounds? Isn't that
that's
where,
correct? Yes, yes.
I've seen photographs of that.
Yes, well, that one was that had royalty there before, but this was the first time of a reigning monarch. Like the Duke of Gloucester had been, the Prince of Wales was here in 1920. And that sort of thing. And the Queen Mother, she's been here a couple of times. I met her on the second occasion. And then they wanted something to commemorate the visit. Here was my opportunity again. Get the fountain. And then somebody wants to put the fountain down at the Namuda Beach, and they want to put anywhere but in Pukekura Park. There was a whole host of letters criticizing the idea without really knowing what it was like. And then in 1956, I think, Easter 1956, we had the official opening. We had 9,000 people there. The area around the Fountain Lake, although we had enlarged it, was just chocker with people. And they're on the move all the time. And the fountain wasn't completely working. I had to work it by hand. And I was in there pulling plugs and switches and winding handles to change the water flows and things like that, because the automatic wasn't completely working. And that's the reason why some people have said that they saw things that first night that they'd never seen since. Because I was in the little pump house working the switches myself, doing the best I could, peeping out to see what I'd created. But it was a great effort. It was different to some of the others, which had large quantities of concrete work around it and that sort of thing. It was as informal as you could possibly make it. And that was to commemorate the visit of the Queen in 1954. It was opened, I think, Easter 1956, if I remember rightly. And then the Queen Mother, when she came, she went down to the entrance to the Fountain Lake to see it playing and to meet that paralysis lady.
June Opie.
Yes, I was standing with June Opie at the entrance there, and she came down with the mayor at the time. But I visited the Queen Mother's home in Scotland again, part of that tour, and visited her brother's place called Drumkilbow, another one of the older gardens in Scotland, and. So I could at least pass a few words.
Gosh, it must be wonderful to see the fountain playing for the first time. Was the mechanism the same as it is now? The way that the pumps and things to make it work. I mean, how does that? Who designed those for the fountain? I mean, it's quite a large fountain. Is it the same fountain that is there now? Because there's a lot of water coming through there, and it's quite a magnificent fountain. I mean, is it exactly the same mechanism?
Same mechanism, yes. So there's been wear and tear, and there's a need of maintenance to get the accuracy of the jets. The clarity of the jets even.
Yes.
You'd have to take them out sometimes and dig fiber or other type of obstructions out of some of the jets. Those sort of things affect the overall display, but the same mechanism, trying to remember the name of the firm in Wellington that they did the one at the Botanic Gardens in Wellington. I was involved with most of the fountains in New Zealand of that period.
So it's quite a sophisticated fountain, isn't it? But did you have lights on it at the same time? Because at the moment, the lights are synchronized with the water's play. Was there lights on it originally?
Yes. 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 We had a bit of problem with particularly swans or geese, the bigger birds, waterfowl, and they get up on top there.
Oh, hello. We've just got Mr. Goodwin's daughter-in-law who's just come in, so we're just about ready to finish up this bit of the tape, actually, too. We're just about to finish this side as well, Mr. Goodwin. So, if you'd like to just, is there anything more you'd like to say about the fountain? Because it is it looks to me to be quite a sophisticated piece of equipment.
Yes, well, it is, as far as the simplicity of the fountain bowl on an island in the centre of the lake, I had seen some pictures of very powerful fountains in Russia, where they sent up high jets and spread them wide, far and wide. And although we have breezes in the park, it just couldn't be, in New Plymouth, it would be hard to find a better sheltered position than that one. And so that was the main reason we stuck to our guns, and it wasn't pushed down to the beach, where it would be even more subject to wind damage. It can be quite magnificent in a twisty gale, and you get the fountain just going up and the wind blowing and twisting it around. But it's something you wouldn't want to wash all the time, but it's absolutely fascinating. And the fact that you can get formal combinations of water effects and lighting effects.
I think it was,
you know, as well, we had to keep within our finances.
Yes.
But it keeps the cost down as much as possible.
Well, it certainly brought a lot of pleasure to a lot of generations, and a lot of people in it will continue doing that too.
Well, the other advantage was that the one in Wellington was for the 1940 Centennial Exhibition, and it was only made in galvanized iron, whereas all the parts in this fountain are copper, copper and brass. So it's got a far longer life. The Wellington one, I think, has been already been converted.
I think it has. Yes, I think it's actually been upgraded, hasn't it?
Yeah. It's a better wearing metals, that sort of thing.
Well, it looks as though you're about to have your lunch. So we'll actually finish up here for today. And thank you very much.